And there's a difference here between giving in and agreeing to something that wasn't optimal, wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah.
And being duped or being railroaded or being tricked. So I can, that's horrible to run out of money and then have to accept something you really don't want to accept. In this, I'm starting to get a sense here that they were pressuring her with litigation. Look, that we're going to go to court. This is going to cost you a gazillion dollars and we'll pay off the guardian ad litem so you don't have to pay anymore, because he needed to go to a job next month and he needed to move next right. month. That was the whole intent of pushing her, was so that he could move. That was his intent all along.
Yes.
Hey, this is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized and agonized a few times to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go?
Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Hello again.
Hello, Rick. Oh, my British accent's coming back. Hello, Rick.
Hello. Howdy. We did that last time, I think. We did this.
We're just hitting all geographical places, which is interesting because today's question is about geography.
Geography. I didn't do real good with geography in school. How about you?
No, I didn't either. Even now, I wish I was better at it. When people talk about countries, I'm like, where is that?
But why do I need to know the capital of every single state in the United States in Canada? Why? Why did I have to learn all that?
I don't know. It's just useless information that tests whether you can memorize things or not.
Oh, there you go.
Which is what a lot of school subjects are all about, right? Mm-hmm. What if you could pick one school subject that actually benefited you in your adult world, what would you say it was?
What school subject? If we don't limit the age level, I would say speech was probably the one that helped me the most.
For me, it was grammar, I think.
I was terrible at grammar.
It helps grammar and spelling. It helps, in your communication.
Did you have to break down the sentences into? Yeah, I did. Yeah, that was helpful. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't need to know what a, you know, dangling participle is and all that stuff, but I do think that it helped me communicate well. And that's been one of my strong suits to be a good communicator, is to know how to speak.
And a good writer.
Correct English. And, you know, be professional. So I want to start today with a good review from Erin. Actually, she sent me an email and I thought this was important because we teach the Dragon Method. And if you're new to our show, you might wonder what is that? And it's an acronym for 6 steps towards learning how to communicate better with your co-parent. And it's something that you can learn about in the journal, or I Am Non-Impossible journal. It's out there on Amazon. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. But she said, I wanted to share with you a recent co-parenting success we had with my fiance's ex, who is a high conflict co-parent. Over the past year and a half, we both have been subject to her gaslighting, lies, and outright disrespect because we moved in together and blended our families. Our new home is 10 minutes further than where my fiance was previously living. And despite having no evidence from teachers or childcare staff, she insisted it was harming the child to travel to our home with this increased time. Your Dragon Method has helped so much in how we view each communication with her. It's helped us reevaluate, reframe, and ultimately come up with alternatives for when the communication ultimately fails. Being able to anticipate her concerns, however ridiculous,
has been extremely helpful, not only to our peace of mind, but in maintaining slow but actual progress.
Wow, progress. Yes, that's
thank
good.
Thank you, Aaron. That yes. makes my day.
Exactly.
You know, when you put all these things together theoretically, and even though you and I have witnessed them in our work with co-parents, it's just good to know that someone is not our client, but listening and reading and able to put the things tools. We suggest into action. Yeah.
Yes.
So appreciate that. Thank you so much, Aaron, for reaching out to us. So we're going to address an email from Raina. This is about what she terms geographical restrictions. So, Rick, you and I have been talking about parenting plan fails.
Yes.
And we've been discussing the importance of detail, but detail that's meaningful, not detail for the sake of detail, because abstractions get people in trouble, right?
Yes.
So from Raina's point of view, she wishes that a geographical restriction would have been put into her final order that would have prevented her co-parent from moving out of the state.
Yeah.
However, and we're going to do this in three parts. I want to talk about what happens oftentimes when things get omitted from a final order that were actually agreed upon in mediation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing. I want to talk about the value of having an attorney and what happens to people when they get priced out.
Oh.
They're out of money and they have to maybe finish their case without an attorney. That also is a thing.
Yeah.
And then what do you do when all of that happens to you? So I think Raina makes some good points that I want to discuss further, although I think that she made a lot of assumptions and then it ended up trusting her co-parent. And then she ended up in this current situation where her co-parent no longer lives in the state and she hasn't seen her two children for at least 6 months.
Yes.
Which is a problem, right?
Oh, gosh, yes.
So she starts her, and I'm not going to read the whole email because there's a lot in here, but she said, geographical restrictions were conveniently omitted on an agreed order created by my co-parent's attorney, and he moved our kids out of state the next month.
Wow.
So if we start with that, it sounds to me that maybe they mediated or had a settlement conference or something, and there was something agreed upon that when she says geographical restrictions, you know, you and I have seen many examples of that, Rick, where someone says, you know, the kids will remain in this school system mm-hmm. forever, or we agree we won't move outside of a 10-mile radius of this zip code, or, you know,
right.
we've seen those. And sometimes it's for good reason. Sometimes I think that's probably not a good idea, depending on the situation. But something was put in, or something was agreed upon between them, that somebody wouldn't move out of state. We can assume that from this paragraph. And then his attorney was charged with putting the order together. But she later on says in her paragraph that before it was all over, she could no longer afford an attorney. So by the time the other attorney, probably by the time they were actually in a mediation, she no longer had representation.
Right.
So the attorney conveniently omitted something important.
Because there wasn't any, yeah, there wasn't anybody else reviewing it except the her. And so, yeah, the attorney got away with leaving it out.
Have we ever seen this problem, Rick?
Yes.
It happens. It happens more than you think. Now, Rick, both you and I have done our share of mediations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
At some point I counted and I've done over 400 mediations in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer do them, but there was a time where I was mediating furiously, constantly, all the time.
Right. Yep.
And as a mediator, I was always very detailed about what I put in the mediated agreement because I did not trust that
no.
the attorneys would take my language and write, you know, my loose or vague language and write the correct detail. Is that how you were as a mediator or are?
Indeed. Yes. And in fact, I would communicate to my clients that because once the agreement is over, yes, we agree. Yes, we agree. We shake hands. They think we're done. But writing the agreement up with that detailed language is a very important part that nobody enjoys doing.
Right.
And so oftentimes they'll try to skip or shortcut or, and it causes problems.
When I was doing private mediation, in other words, not connected to the court, because that was always more of a time crunch when I was doing it at the court.
Oh, yes. You
know? But when I was doing it privately, I always, collected money up front for, it's going to take me probably a few days to write your order because I'm going to put it together and send it to you. And you're going to say, oh, you forgot this. And then I'm going to, modify it. And we may do some extended mediation even after the day of mediation, because I wanted to make absolutely certain that, and, some mediators and attorneys would say, oh, that's a nightmare, because we want to keep them in mediation for 14 hours. And then at the very end, we want to coerce them into an agreement.
Yes.
And we don't want to give them another day to think about it.
Oh, because
if they sleep on it, the next morning they might change their mind. And I'm like, exactly. Because they have the right to change their minds.
Aha. Yes.
That's a big pet peeve of mine.
Mine too. Exactly.
Yes. One of the reasons that I actually no longer did mediation, because that's what attorneys expect.
Yeah.
And I've had my share of clients who just get worn out in mediation, which one of the tenets of mediation is no coercion.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. But
keeping someone, I had a client recently said they went in 11 hours of mediation without dinner.
Yes.
Well, now I'm hungry. I'm tired. I'm frustrated. And it's torture. It's a torture tactic to get you to just sign on the dotted line. Anyway, I digress.
Most people don't know their rights in mediation. And I have heard horrors. I'm sure you have too. Horror stories of the way they were treated because they didn't know they could turn to the mediator and go, stop that. You can't do that. You keep doing that. I'm going to report you, or I'm going to get up and leave, or both.
Or to just say, I'd like to end now. Can we pick this up tomorrow?
Yes. Yeah.
Which was always my pet peeve when I worked for the court 20 years ago. And the final hearing was the next day. Mm. And we had to get an agreement that day in mediation or else, right? And there's a lot of pressure, not only on the mediator, but on, everybody. Because if you don't get an agreement, then they're going to a trial the next day. And to me, that in and of itself is a form of coercion.
Yes.
That you wait to the last minute, the 11th hour, and then you force people into maybe an agreement they really don't want to make. Anyway.
Oh, we could spend a whole episode on what people don't know about mediation. Yes.
Exactly. Hey, listeners, you've probably heard Rick and I talk a lot about the Dragon Method of communicating with your co-parent, which is a step-by-step process to think about each conflict you have and to devise a plan to resolve it with or without your co-parent's cooperation. Many parents have told us this method, coupled with the structured email protocol, has saved their sanity. If you'd like to know more, check out our podcast companion journal called I Am Non-Impossible, a 12-week journey to co-parenting peace. You can find it on Amazon in print or Kindle formats. Just click on the link in our show notes. So when she says it was conveniently omitted, I'm thinking of mediated agreements that come through our office at CNFC occasionally that I've seen where parents will send us, we agreed to come see you, and there's like no detail.
Right.
There's a mediated agreement. It has three bullet points. Parties agree the children will get counseling. Parties agree they'll go see that CNFC organization over there.
Yes.
Parties agree to stop fighting with each other, and you're like, what is this? Who did this? How is this helpful? And if you take a mediated agreement like that and expect the attorneys then to write comprehensible detail for a final order, you're leaving it up to whatever attorney who's writing up the order decides their client wants to see in the order. So if you're in mediation and you've got a mediator like writing on the back of an envelope your agreement.
Oh.
Stop and say, okay, I just want to make sure whatever we agree on here today, I'm going to see in wording at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to check and make sure all of that transfers over to the final agreement. So we don't know whether or not Raina didn't have an opportunity. I'm pretty sure before the attorney can send it over for a judge to sign, it has to be approved by both sides. That's been my experience with attorneys. However, maybe they just didn't send it to her. And she made a lot of assumptions about that. She should have demanded, wait, before that goes to the court, I need to see a copy of it.
And we make it, at least here in, well, I think nationally, the best practices ruling is you have a right to have your mediated agreement reviewed by anybody, your mother-in-law, if you wanted to, before you sign it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my first point, is this is a problem. So it really is up to the consumer of mediation. It's up to the parties to make sure that what's agreed upon is written down properly, that before you leave that mediation, you look at the mediator's version of the agreement and agree to it, and make sure that you get a copy of it and that you compare that to whatever final order proposal the other side or even your own attorney comes up with. I've had cases where the person's own attorney missed a few things.
Yes.
And they're like, you know, I had a case recently where it got missed that activities were talked about, but it wasn't talked about how they were going to split the cost of those activities. It was left out completely. And then it was just up in the air for them to fight about later. So that's really on the consumer to make sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. So I'm sorry that happened to you, Raina, but it does happen and you have to be aware of it. Now I'd like to talk a little bit, Rick, about the value of an attorney.
Yeah.
Because I've been known to say, you don't need an attorney, which I don't really mean. When we were talking about certain cases that we aired, right?
Yeah, where the judge says, don't ever come back, right?
Well, the judge says, cut it out, you know, and don't ever come back here. And I have been known to say to those clients, I would just let it play out and then go back and don't take an attorney because it'll cost you a lot of money only for the judge to scold you again.
Right. Yes.
So if any of you took that to mean that Diane said never have an attorney, that is not what I'm saying. But Raina's issue here brings the point home to me that it's vitally important in certain cases, in many cases, that you have a good attorney by your side. The problem is you don't want to hire the guy down the street who offers to do it on the cheap because he's a real estate attorney.
Right. Yes.
Or the local DUI expert. Because if they don't know anything about family law, they could actually do a disservice to you. And they're not supposed to take on cases ethically, where they have no experience or knowledge of that particular subject, but attorneys do it all the time because they're looking for business.
Right.
And you as a consumer are looking for the least expensive way to get through this. And sometimes that's not the way to go. So in Raina's case, I'm going to read this part of the email that I think is vitally important to what we're going to talk about next. She says, I was railroaded with litigation as the primary custodian until I couldn't afford representation all the way through to a final hearing. So I agreed to sign what I thought was meant to be a temporary order. I never went before a judge and never got a chance to present evidence. Despite it saying permanent at the top, I signed with the understanding that the guardian ad litem would finish her recommendation within 3 months and the order would be modified. That's a huge fail on Raina's part.
Yeah.
Because if it said permanent, I would have said, wait a minute, my understanding is that this is temporary.
Yeah.
If you're signing an order or you're signing an agreement in mediation and you're not going to go to a judge, we all know the guardian ad litem is done at that point.
Yes.
If you remember the case from hell in season two, remember that was one of the issues Sarah had, was her attorney didn't tell her. Now, if you sign this, it ends everything and you're never going to see a report from the guardian.
Right.
Because once you sign it and you're done, the guardian's like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to do a report for you now. You've already made an agreement regardless of what I was going to say. So had Raina known that, she may not have signed this agreement. If what she really wanted was the guardian to finish her report, I suspect what happened is Raina ran out of money and could no longer afford to pay the guardian to do more than she had done, because she said later on, she said the guardian was paid in full and never completed a recommendation. Well, you paid her in full, but then you expected her to do more work in the next 3 months.
Yes.
So all I can say is I don't think Raina did this on purpose. I think she was innocent in her approach, but a good attorney would have said, oh, no, this is final. You won't get a report from the guardian. And hey, by the way, his attorney omitted that paragraph about your co-parent not being allowed to move out of the state.
Right.
And this is the other thing I want to talk about, is that when you run out of money and the other parent doesn't, oftentimes you do have to give in.
Yeah.
I've seen it over and over and over in my career that people with primary custody, whether it's mom or dad, when they run out of money and they can't fight it and they go to one of these settlement conferences or mediations and they think, I got to get this over with because I've mortgaged my house to the hilt or I have no more credit card room. And then you settle, then you come to somebody like me and you're grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Grieving the fact that maybe you did give in to something you didn't think was going to be good for your children.
And there's a difference here between giving in and agreeing to something that wasn't optimal, wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah.
And being duped or being railroaded or being tricked. So that's horrible to run out of money and then have to accept something you really don't want to accept. In this, I'm starting to get a sense here that they were pressuring her with litigation. Look, that we're going to go to court. This is going to cost you a gazillion dollars. And, you know, the we'll pay off the guardian ad litem, so you don't have to pay anymore, because he needed to go to a job next month and he needed to move next month. That was the whole intent of pushing her, was so that he could move. That was his intent all along.
Yes. So the most disturbing part of this is she said she has not seen her 6 and 8 year old daughters for at least 6 months. I don't know how long. It just says in her email that this was 6 months after the move is when her state lost jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about what she needs to be doing at this point. I understand what happened. I understand that it's very upsetting what happened. I understand that. I know even if he had have put in the final order that your co-parent could not move out of state, he could have moved out of state, probably would have anyway, and violated the order.
Right.
Because what do we know about that, Rick, when people leave the state with kids? Because oftentimes, and I don't know about everybody else's state, but I know in Georgia, if you're the primary custodian, which it sounds like he got awarded primary custody, you have a lot of power to do things like move, especially if you have final say on education.
Yeah.
And that can often trump, right, everything
yes.
else. So his attorney may have told him, hey, now that you're primary custodian, you really have this ability to move out of state if you want to do that. And so I'm saying to Raina, even if it would have said in the order he couldn't do it, he might have still done it. And you would have had a case, a contempt case.
Yeah.
By the time the contempt case would have been heard in the court, it could have been 6 months to a year later. It's quite possible the judge would have said, well, the kids are already established in their new school system in the new state. I don't think I want to disrupt their education. So we're just going to leave them there.
Right.
Because After all, he is the primary custodian.
Right.
We see that happen all the time. So parents are savvy in knowing I'm willing to take a chance on this contempt because once my kids are established in the new school system, maybe they're closer to extended family now. And you know, they're, a judge may look at it and go, okay, well, they're in a good place. Let's not move the kids again. And they'll just tell the non-custodial, suck it up.
And because, and more likely in this case, because they're so far away, I don't get to see them. And maybe I can't afford to travel to go see them a lot. And now they turn that against me and say, see, she's not even coming to see the kids. So obviously.
Right. So my question for Raina would be, why has it been so long since you've seen the children? Because I don't care what state they move to, I would be in a car driving all night long, getting to wherever that is to make sure that I saw my kids. Did you go and he refused? And that's quite another issue.
Right, right.
Because that contempt issue would not be tolerated by the court.
No, if you've got parenting time.
Right. So we're assuming in this agreement that you made outside of court, you were awarded some parenting time, then you need to go take your parenting time because you don't want it to look as if you just let them go and now I'm stuck and I can't see my kids anymore. I would move heaven and earth to go wherever he is to make sure I see those children and then deal with whatever contempt you're going to deal with, whether you decide to do that on your own because you don't have any money or you find a way to hire an attorney to at least... When he moves out of state, I'm assuming that sort of nullifies the parenting plan, doesn't it? Her parenting plan might say she gets Thursday through Monday every other week. You can't do that if he's a plane ride away. That's impractical.
Right. Yeah, they've set up a parenting time schedule based upon locality.
Right.
And as soon as he moves, he screwed that up. So
if nothing else, you need to file a motion of some sort, even if you do it on your own, or you need to go to a mediation, or you need to come up with a new parenting plan, given the fact that he's now in a different state.
Yeah. You already qualify for a modification.
So you're either going to fight it, try to get the kids back, which who knows whether that would be successful, but at the very least, figure out what your long distance parenting schedule is going to look like.
Yes.
Get that in place and then start exercising that. These girls, they're 6 and 8. They need their mama in their lives. I don't care who else he's cohabitating with. They need her.
Yep.
She needs to be in their lives. So whatever you've got to do, Raina, get legal advice, you know, get yourself there, wherever it is that he is, knock on that door and say, I'm here to see my kids. And if he refuses to let you, you've got another more egregious issue on your hands that you need to talk to a judge about.
And another insidious part of this is at 6 and 8, this sets up perfect scenario for alienation, that dad's telling mom she didn't love you and she doesn't want to see you. And there's no way to counter that.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm not an attorney, so find out from an attorney. Just because your state lost jurisdiction doesn't mean that you can't file something in the new state.
Right.
So you may have to investigate attorneys or legal aid or something in the other state to make sure that you are able to get something started in the courts about this. But again, long distance parenting doesn't automatically, you know, hurt children. We do know it's, especially kids this age, it takes you out of their life quite a bit. And kids of this age really need both parents in their lives on a consistent basis. So whatever that consistency is, make it happen.
Yeah.
Because they need that right now. If they were teenagers, I would probably say something different. They still need you in their lives, but on a more limited basis. But these girls need you. So I don't know what Raina's currently doing, but that's the advice that I have, is find a way, whatever that is, to make sure that you are in their lives. And even if that's, you can only see them every 3 months for a long weekend, it's got to be consistent
and
predictable and dependable. 6 months or more without seeing them at all is really hard on them.
Exactly.
You know, let's forget about how hard it is on Raina. Mm-hmm. How hard is it on the children? And how is dad okay with that? What is he telling them about their mother? Which, like you said, could be the beginnings of an alienation case.
So. Yep.
All right, Raina, thank you for your question. I hope it was helpful. Hope you don't feel scolded. We weren't in any way trying to scold you. I understand how this can happen innocently to people who are unaware.
Right.
I hope that our listeners, if you're a listener going through something like this, that you really pay attention to what a mediator is doing. You pay attention to what a proposed order says exactly, and you go over it with a fine-tooth comb. And whatever time you end up with, take it and be consistent with it until you can make a change. In this case, a change may never happen. So she needs to take the time she can take now.
Buyer beware. Yep.
Yep. All right. Great. All right. We'll talk to everybody next week.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, before the COVID lockdown, I never thought that I would do online therapy with my clients. But I actually found it to be very satisfying for both of us. BetterHelp is customized online therapy just like that, that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Co-Parent Dilemma listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/dilemma. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/dilemma, DILEMMA. The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.